and they made me. Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, I think we just had the longest pre-show off recording conversation we've ever had.
Yeah, well, we didn't record it, but I do think people would.
Yeah.
I think if we charged $10 for that conversation, I don't know if people would buy it, but anybody who bought it would definitely have been happy.
Yeah, it was an interesting conversation. We said a lot of things that we definitely can't say when we're recording.
Yeah. What if, but I make this joke on the Rob podcast that we have like a Patreon level that hears like the pre and post conversations. Yeah. Although there's never any post conversations because everyone always has to go when the podcast is over on both this one and yeah. the other one. I do think like that's not a bad Patreon idea.
I think the pre-conversations are for most podcasts are probably better than the podcast.
Totally. It's like, wait, we're not recording, right? I think that's...
Yeah, exactly. Even and when you have guests, we've had some guests say some interesting things before they come on,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I think, all right, well, it's an option to consider.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, we're not recording until Wednesday. It's not like we felt a rush to record right after the Super Bowl. It was a garbage Super Bowl, unless you're Trey Wingo.
Yeah, I also, I had, like, one of the worst days ever today. I was running to catch a bus to go get lunch. Once a week, I treat myself to lunch. I go out to like a restaurant. So I was running to catch a bus.
One restaurant? You don't go to two different
Sometimes
restaurants?
Sometimes I do that. But today I actually did that. But I treat myself to like lunch by myself once a week. Just like I know I'm going to have like a long, boring day. All right, that's the day. Like that's my, like I treat myself every week. And so the timer on the oven must be like 3 minutes fast because I went down thing. I had like 4 minutes for the bus and it was coming. The bus is coming towards me. So I start running towards it because the
got to speed to that bus
because I need to meet halfway or else they'll go past. And I realize at a certain point I've caught the eye of the driver and he's going to drive past the bus stop, but only by like 10 feet. So I like slow down realizing, all right, he's either going to stop or not, but now it's like in his hands. And as I slow down, I twist my leg and I go flying and I like land as basically at the step of the bus on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And now I'm like splayed out on the ground, writhing in pain.
Impressing everybody
on the bus. And now I don't know what to do. And then so he's like looking at me like the craziest. Also, I didn't realize after I'm wearing a white shirt. And it was filthy, like, because I landed in, like, what must have been mud. I realized afterwards I was walking around with, like, a fully muddy shirt. I must have looked like an insane person getting on this bus, because I'm on the floor, like, writhing in pain, and then I realize, like, I start waving him on, like, go, 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 because, as if I was in, like, Nam, and, like all right, leave me behind, because... you guys go, I'll catch the next bus because you fall. Like, I can't even tell how hurt I am. Like, I know I'm in a lot of pain, but I also assume that it's because I just fell. But like, I also can't feel one of my legs at all.
Not good.
So a guy who must have been in his 60s or 70s comes out and like picks me up, like, but not physically picks me up, but like puts his shoulder, me around his shoulder or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I just walk onto the bus, assuming I'll be okay in a minute. So I, like, pay, and then I realize, like, oh, I can't even, like, walk to the seat. And also, I'm, like, trying not to make eye contact with everyone because it's extremely embarrassing. I was just, like, writhing on the floor in pain all these, 60 seconds. What felt like an hour, but was probably just a minute.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then I sit down, then I realize, like, oh, my shirt is all black. Cause I, like, zip up I have a sweatshirt. And then I get to the, like, near the restaurant, and I start walking, and I realize, like, oh, I can't walk. Like, I literally cannot walk. And so I still get food. Yes, two different restaurants. They were next to each other. So, like, I waited for one. I also like it because it's like you order at the slow one, then you go to the fast one, you get that, and then you come back and the slow one's ready. And then I have like lunch and dinner, or lunch for today and lunch for tomorrow. Sometimes I do. And then I'm lazy. I don't have to go back out twice because my big mistake was running and leaving the house. And that's how I got hurt.
Well, this is what you get for leaving the house.
So I get home. My wife was taking a nap. She has a tough life. And she wakes up. And so I have to, like, tell her, like, I think we need to go to, like, I don't know, like, the ER or a doctor or something because, like, I can't walk. I would, like, had to hop up the stairs and hop. I was, like, hopping around the house. I can't put anything on my right foot.
Before calling your wife, you messaged me and said the podcast might be in peril.
Yeah, and I also, like, so she was baffled because she's like, wait, so you hurt yourself right outside the house by the bus stop and decided to go, like,
to get
15 minutes away.
Yeah.
Like, and by the way, the restaurant is next to the doctor's office. So you also could have like hopped in there and probably, you know, socialized medicine, gotten checked up pretty quickly for $2. But yes, I went and I said, like, I didn't realize the how bad it was until like after I got home, because I was still kind of in shock and it was swelling up. So, but yeah, I was lazy and I realized, like, I'm just going to work, and I have not gone to the doctor, but I can't walk. Like, there's no way it's just like a bruise. It has to, something has to be broken or like torn. It's like unbelievably painful.
So what are you planning on doing?
I think hopefully I'll go to the doctor in the morning. I mean, I can't use my right foot. Like, my wife's going to have to drive me to the doctor. But I don't know. We'll see. But it's right, embarrassing.
I thought you don't drive anyway.
I mean, I can, but I physically can't drive right now because it's...
You can't drive with your left foot?
I mean, I guess I could. It would be like a weird situation. I can't do... What I noticed today is I can't do anything with my left foot. Like, even stand when I was like standing around, like leaning on something with my left foot is like weaker than like most people's left hands. I didn't realize this. And then... So she's mad because I still got lunch, which she was annoyed I got lunch because, like, there were things I was supposed to do that didn't involve, like, leaving the house for an hour. And now I come home and, like, by the way, like, anything I was able to do, like, the dishes weren't done and, like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do them because I can't stand to do the dishes. I said, like, if you get me, like, a high chair, I'll sit and do them. And so...
But heroically, you are here.
And I got... Yeah, but I got injured going to get food for myself and not for her also. So she... is I like
when you're getting takeout, you don't get extra.
Oh, she didn't want she the place I went to. She won't eat at. Okay. It's complicated. She's on a diet. So anyway, so that was my day. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I may just like she said. My wife talked about if my foot is broken, putting me down like a horse, like maybe sending me to the glue factory. So yeah. I don't think I'm going to get a ton of sympathy going forward from anybody in this house.
Yeah. And by the way, in spite of all that, you've had a dramatically better day your last few days than I have.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I'm crushing you these last few days.
Yeah, not going to get into that on the podcast. I'll edit this out. And then, that's on top of the other things that happened to me and other members of my family over the weekend. So not great times for your podcast co-hosts, but we're here.
And football's over. It's the worst time of the year. Like, you know...
Well, that's the thing. Like, so many bad things happened this weekend. The least bad thing was the Super Bowl being a garbage, worthless Super Bowl, which the Patriots won again.
Yeah, the only good thing that happened... Did you go to a Super Bowl party or you stayed home?
No, I was supposed to. I ended up not because of other things over
the
weekend.
Yeah, so I went to a Super Bowl party. It was good because a lot of times you have, like, 20 people, and then there's a lot of riffraff, and, like, you spend time arguing with people who it's the only game they're watching all year.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of, like, spicy takes.
Frustrating.
By the third quarter, they become experts. It's like you with the UFC. By the second fight, you knew how to fix the sport. Yeah. So we only had like the hardcores, and it was great. We also had one guy who's like, we found this like god of grilling, and he like spent the whole time. He like wasn't there when we started. He wasn't answering calls. We thought like he was bailing, and then he shows up with like so much food. People needed to like help him out from the car with it, and he made like gourmet deli sandwiches that were like overstuffed. That were like the greatest thing I've ever had in my life, and he was making dogs and burgers, and so like the food took my mind off like what was obviously an abominable game. Someone sent me a picture of their Super Bowl party, and there was like four people sleeping on the couch.
Yeah, not great. Is some of the bloom off the rose for Sean McVay?
I don't think so. I think the bloom is off the rose for Goff. Yeah, he definitely made tactical errors. First of all, being a worse coach than Bill Belichick is not exactly like an own, especially since he's going to get better.
Yeah.
Belichick didn't start as an amazing coach either. He started as a good coach and got better.
Yeah.
But
there was no adjustment.
No adjustment from the Rams, but the adjustment they needed to make was start completing short passes, and they didn't have the personnel for that. Their most dynamic offensive player, we'll never know, I guess, right? Like
that's the
hard. We'll never know. Like the same like the Malcolm Butler stuff happens, right? And then last year, and we didn't know. We know no more than we did the day after the Super Bowl last year about what happened.
But this was a couple weeks.
Correct, and we know nothing. I don't think we'll ever know. Like I think,
yeah.
like he's probably hurt. Maybe he like you know, like punched a puppy. I have no idea what Todd Gurley did.
Well, I think the problem is if he were to get surgery now, and if they can't admit that he was hurt now, because then they'll get in trouble for not having put it on the injury report.
Well, was he not on the injury report at all? He wasn't even like probable.
No, they insisted after the conference championship that he was fine. That health was not related.
It's very
to
strange.
His play in the.
It's also strange because like it was so egregious. I'm sure the league stepped in and called the Rams and were like, "You have to tell us what's going on." So then they had to like double down and say like.
Yeah, it's only the most important skill position player in the league the last 2 years.
Right. So you have that. They're playing a guy who was out of the league 2 months ago. One of their best receivers is injured. Now, these were two very healthy teams, you know, notwithstanding the Cooper Kupp injury. Yeah. Like, and I guess, you know, Josh Gordon, which people didn't really talk about. But, like, you forget he was on the team and made the team much more dynamic this season. But outside those two receivers, these were basically two of the healthiest teams in the league. You have to be a little nervous about Goff, who could still get better. He's only been in the league 2 years. Or 3 years, I guess, now, right?
Yeah, now it's
But two with McVay.
The Rams went all in for this year. They had a lot of expensive veteran free agents.
Yeah, the Rams were one of the ultimate stars and scrubs teams we've ever seen in the free agency era, right? Every single guy on their team earns the minimum or like $14 million a year.
Now, they still have two more years on Goff's rookie contract. So, you know, maybe they have a way to figure it out and try and run it back one more time. I'm not sure how they're going
to. I mean, Goff's a rough guy to pay $22 million to, or it might be 28 by then. Like, you know.
Well, so there was an article on Pro Football Focus saying how they're not going to renew him and how McVay has his eyes on Kirk Cousins already because his contract will expire at the same time as Goff.
Let's, like, we're getting way too ahead of ourselves. Like, Kirk Cousins could be out of the NFL in 2 years. Like, let's.
Yeah, Goff has 2 years to prove himself, but. You know, right now, would I rather have Cousins at $30 million a year or Goff at $30 million a year? Of course.
I don't think you can give Goff the 30 if he doesn't get much better.
But I'd rather have Goff on his current contract than Cousins.
Yes. So, but listen, we're at the point where paying the B-plus guy $25 million is well, it's nobody ever lets the quarterbacks go. So, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, nobody's like the Lions shouldn't have re-signed Stafford because they would have gone 0-16 this year, probably. Yeah, which maybe is good. I don't know. Maybe that is the way to go. But... tricky.
I mean, there's a chance. People are saying there's a chance that the Raiders might let Carr go. There's a chance the Bucks might let Jameis go. Otherwise, top free agents. I mean, somebody's going to trade for Foles. Do you think that Nick Foles is going to get a multi-year contract? I don't think so. I think he'll get.
Well, he could get a multi-year contract. You mean a multi-year at 18?
A multi-year guarantee. I don't think so. I think he'll get a little more than what Keenum got or Brad. Well, I mean, look, they're going to put the franchise tag on him, which will be about $25 million, and then they're going to trade him to somebody. But the team that acquires him is not going to give him more than the franchise, is what I'm saying.
Per year, no.
You can't. Yeah, no, I'm saying they're not going to. He will not.
Well, if you're trading for him, you're saying he's our quarterback. If you're trading like actual, you know. Unless you're trading like a fourth-round pick and then just agreeing to pay him.
Well, the Eagles are saying they want a third-round pick. So if that's their open...
Well, then you're not signing him for... Then you're not asking... You know, you're not expecting to sign him for only 1 year, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think any team is... You think a team is going to give him a multi-year contract? I don't think they will.
I mean, Mike Glennon got like $16 million 2 years ago. Nick Foles won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Case Keenum got $20 million last year, and Sam Bradford got $15 million. Foles will get about that. He'll get the $25 million franchise tag. I don't think...
If he was a free agent right now, what would he get? What would Nick Foles get?
That's what I'm saying. If he was a free agent, I think he would get $25 million. I think he'd get a...
Why would you sign a one-year deal? Like, I feel like you could... I don't know. It's weird planning.
If you're Foles or if you're...
Quarterbacks rarely get a one-year contract when they're an unrestricted free agent.
I just... Case Keenum got one last year. Sam Bradford got one last year. I disagree.
Foles has more value than those guys did. Certainly than Bradford's corpse.
Yeah, well, again, that's why it'll be 25 instead of 15. But it's the same concept. Foles is not a guy you want to guarantee multiple years to because we haven't seen him be an above-average quarterback for more than two games at a time.
I'm not disagreeing. He's a unique situation in the fact that he's so up and down.
I think the Eagles are going to franchise him, and he's going to be traded. They're not going to trade him to the Giants or Washington because I imagine they don't want to trade him in the division. Mm-hmm. So I think he'll probably go to Jacksonville, you know, maybe Denver. I don't know. And I think that he'll get that 1 year, 25, and then if he does well, then maybe he'll be able to get a 2 or 3 year guarantee after that.
Yeah, Jacksonville is a good spot for him.
Yeah, I don't see a scenario where a team gives him 30 or 35 or 40 million guaranteed because I just, you know, we haven't seen it from him enough. Anyway, so the Super Bowl sucked. We didn't really want to talk about it that much.
Well, yeah, I mean, people probably don't want to hear even this, but in your mind, is this the worst Super Bowl ever? What's worse,
no, for sure
a completely boring game that has, I mean, I went on YouTube to show my kids something, and it's like, hey, do you want the next day, do you want to watch highlights of the Super Bowl? And it was a 13 and a half minute video, which every NFL game this year was like a 13 minute video on YouTube. It used to be like 5 or 6.
There was nothing to show.
What would you show? Like, I was thinking, what play will you remember from this game in 2 years? What play that happened in this game would have even made the 13-minute clip from last year when there was like dozens of highlights, or the Patriots-Falcons, that there were like touchdowns left out of the, of like a 12-minute highlight in some of those games.
Yeah.
Whereas here, like, they must have been showing a lot of incompletions. Like, as someone who's like caught highlights before, I can't even, I can't, like, there aren't 12 minutes of highlights in the in these games. It must. I didn't click on it, but it would be, it'll be funny to go back.
I think the highlight is Brandon Cooks dropping the touchdown.
Yeah,
in the end zone.
You knew at the time that was such a big deal.
And then the interception right after that.
Yeah.
That was the
I went through some of the boring Super Bowl, like the real boring Super Bowls, like the Pittsburgh-Minnesota 2-0 at the halftime game that was referenced a lot on the telecast. Yeah.
Well, the Broncos-Panthers a few years ago was a
Broncos-Panthers was really sloppy. Had storylines. Like, people cared about that going in. You had Peyton Manning. You had Cam Newton was like a big star. This game had no buzz going in and no buzz going out. The Broncos-Seahawks game was awful, but had some big plays, but was the only blowout.
And at least coming out, it was like, wow, how good is that Seattle defense? We might have a new, you know, juggernaut team.
And people forget the Patriots-Panthers game in 03 was, or January of 04, was unwatchable until like 12 minutes left in the game when they just traded touchdowns for, you know, like 6 touchdowns in a row.
Yeah, the first 3 quarters.
But it was, that game was also like 3-0 for a while.
There was a few games... There was a few games when an undeserving team would make it, usually from the NFC. Like, the Colts-Bears game sucked about 10 years ago. Obviously, the Giants-Ravens game sucked for the same reason. So, the, you know, there was a couple of those. And then when we were kids, all those Super Bowls were worthless in, like, the, you know, in the 80s and in the early 90s, other than 20-19. You know, all the Bills Super Bowls sucked. And the Chargers.
Right, so would you rather a game that was close until there were 2 minutes left, or a game with lots of touchdowns, but it's, you know, 49-26 Niners, but really it was, you know, 49-10 or 55-10 Niners over Broncos.
Well, some, I mean, like, we skipped, like, the 17-14, the undefeated season for the Patriots. That was not the best game either, honestly. All right, well, we're sort of beating around the bush. So why don't we actually talk about this little medium, this little column that I posted today.
Well, look at Chester plugging himself.
Well, this is a framework to, you know, we're talking about this anyway. So, you know, last week I posted online the most devastating conference championship losses ever.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously both the Saints loss to the Rams and the Chiefs loss to the Patriots were in the top 10. The Patriots loss was actually number two. The Saints loss on the blown Roby Coleman pass interference hit to the helmet. That was actually number two, the second most devastating loss of all time. This loss for the Rams is not at all devastating. It was a boring game. They no-showed. They don't have like a long history. They don't really have any real fans. Nobody really cares. But I did put together what I do have is the 20 most devastating Super Bowl losses of all time. You've taken a look at my column, right?
Yeah.
So we're not going to go through every game, but we'll talk about some of the highlights, and you can give me any takes you have.
I mean, my general take is that it's bad.
My list is bad.
I mean, there's a lot of mistakes, but I'll correct them.
Okay, yeah. So my honorable mention was last year's Super Bowl. Very exciting Super Bowl. Obviously, a huge win for the Eagles. If the Patriots come back to win, it's right near the top as an Eagles loss. But for the Patriots...
I agree that. I certainly agree with that. But what do you consider devastating? My criteria would probably be, how upset are the people in the locker room after the game? I think that's a fair thing.
So not the fans?
I'd say the players and the fans, because for the Patriots, let's say that game, let's say the Patriots had lost an even more devastating way last year. Let's say they come back in tie and lose in overtime on a pick six when they have the ball at the 10. Like, they've still won at that point. They had won five Super Bowls. So like, that can't be that devastating. Like, a team that's never won or hasn't won in 50 years has to beat that. Exactly. So the Eagles, obviously, on the flip side, obviously could have had their hearts broken.
So that's why that one is not in my top 20. I agree with you.
But I will... So one of my issues for what you have is... I mean, do you want to start going through, like...
Sure. All right. So number 20, I have the Vikings' first Super
Bowl. Oh, by the way, somebody... I won't say who, but somebody messaged me when you posted on Twitter and said... Hold on. They said, I haven't opened up Chester's devastating Super Bowl losses article yet, but I'm going to guess the Vikings' losses are all in the top 10.
No, none of them are. Because they weren't. Because the Vikings no-showed. They weren't particularly close games.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vikings did not deserve to win any of the Super Bowls. So that person is wrong. That person has to stop projecting their homerness onto me. Yeah. So number 20, I have the Vikings' first Super Bowl loss. This was sort of a mini version of the Jets.
Right. If the Jets had lost the year before, this game would be very famous.
Yeah. So the Vikings were 12-point favorites. They were a historically good team. But there's a couple things. First of all, the Chiefs were much better than the Jets the year before. And also, the Jets winning the year before made it a little
bit
of a
shock.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it was a pretty famous game for many years.
Losing as a 12-point favorite is a big deal. But losing by three scores, because there was no two-point conversion, it's not a close game.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, the Vikings hadn't yet lost four Super Bowls. So at the time, it's like, all right, we lost. We'll get back there another time. A couple years later, they lose to the Dolphins. That was a game they were underdogs, and they weren't particularly close. So I didn't care about that one.
Maybe the least famous the least talked about Super Bowl is that Minnesota Miami game.
Yeah, their third Super Bowl loss is number 19 on my list. I think has an argument, and you mentioned it before. That's the game. It was 2-0 at the half. That has an argument.
Yeah, Have you ever watched this whole game? I've rewatched this whole game relatively recently.
Well, yes, I actually did.
The big play of the game, it was a lot like the game we just watched, minus a couple defensive special teams touchdowns. Basically, the biggest play of the game for the Vikings is a pass interference, like the entire, it was like 40-something yards. It was an awful call.
Yeah.
Now it would be called uncatchable, and there was really not a lot going on. It wasn't even the biggest play, because I think Chuck Foreman fumbles on the next play from the five.
Chuck Foreman fumbles on the five-yard line.
So then the Steelers get the ball, and their punt is blocked right into the end zone. So it's 9-6 late in the third, and the Vikings never get the ball back because the Steelers score a touchdown.
Let's just describe this exact the play-by-play in this part of the game, because this just illustrates how bad of a game it is. So it's 9-0.
But it's not a bad game. It's two, iconic defenses. It was ugly, but...
It's the Steel Curtain, the Purple People Eaters. Well, this game was supposed to be played in the brand new Superdome. The game wasn't ready, so it had to be played in Tulane Stadium. The stadium was not ready at all. The field was soggy because they hadn't put a tarp and there was a storm. It was a disaster of a game. It's 9-0 in the fourth quarter. As you said, the Steelers get flagged for a 42-yard pass interference, which gives the Vikings first and goal from the five. It's probably a bad call. My article links to all these key plays, so you can watch it yourself. On the very next play, Chuck Foreman fumbles the ball. The Steelers recover inside their own five. They go 3-and-out. They punt back to the Vikings. The Vikings block the punt, recovered in the end zone, making it 9-6, and then the Vikings miss the extra point. So you have a bad call, a fumble, a blocked punt, and a missed extra point within four plays, basically.
It's very ugly. And then the Steelers have a very long drive where I think Franco Harris scores a touchdown, and it was 16-6, and the Vikings never get the ball with, down by one score.
Yeah. Now, there was a Steelers fumble on that play that was overturned, and it was ruled that he was down.
I think Targandon has four turnovers in the game also.
Yeah, Tarkenton's playoff stats are very, very bad.
So were Elway's until he started winning at the end. Dragging teams that weren't, offenses that weren't capable to the Super Bowl, and then got exposed. Because that's really what happened, to Elway against the Giants and the Redskins and stuff.
Yeah.
And the Niners.
So that's 2019. After that, the Vikings are off this list. So, sorry, Vikings, you suck. Number 18 on my list is Super Bowl 17, Washington 27, Miami 17. This was the strike year.
There's an asterisk next to this whole season.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, so eight teams end up making the playoffs, but the two best teams in each conference, one of them being your Jets in the AFC, did actually survive with no buys all the way to the conference championships.
Yeah. They also, if you know how they did the schedule, they just canceled the seven games that they missed, I think.
Yeah.
So it was a very uneven schedule also.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the two best teams actually made the Super Bowl or the two top seeds in each conference, so that was fine. John Riggins was like a machine in this game. He had 38.
The Redskins were a capable Super Bowl team. The Dolphins ultimately, it's a little bit of a blip that a team with David Woodley made the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It's so weird cuz in the previous decade they made a bunch of Super Bowls with Brian Griese, and then 2 years later they make the Super Bowl with Dan Marino. But to make it this year, and David Woodley was the youngest starting quarterback to ever play in a Super Bowl at that point.
Woodley's not the worst Super Bowl QB ever, because Rex Grossman really barely played other than the Super Bowl year.
Yeah. No, Trent Dilfer.
Dilfer had a career compared to those guys.
Dilfer had more of a career. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right, so that's number 18. Number 17 is the second Giants-Patriots game.
Yeah, they just lost a close game.
It can't be devastating.
The issue is that Giants team, from a statistical standpoint, was just so historically mediocre. 9-7, outscored in the regular season.
But that's why, that coupled with the fact that the Patriots wanted revenge for 4 years earlier.
Yes, very frustrating loss.
It was devastating for the Patriots.
You could feel it the whole game that, this is happening again. It was a weird game from the safety on. The thing is, the Giants believe they could. Do you remember what the line was in that game? what the spread was?
Yeah, I have all the lines in my article.
Oh, 3-point underdogs. Okay. So it was very much understood that the Giants might win.
You have to point out, the reason they were only 3-point underdogs, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, because even though they sucked in the regular season, they had been phenomenal in the playoffs. They went into 15-1 Green Bay and won.
Yeah, killed them. 37-20, I mean, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so they had a, and then they had a very good playoffs. And then also because,
who they beat in the NFC Championship game? The Niners?
People thought that was the Kyle Williams game. That was a very lucky one, obviously. But people thought that they sort of had the Patriots number. So it's hard to have a Patriots loss too high. But also remember, the Patriots hadn't won a Super Bowl at this point in like 8 years.
Right, it felt like, so it, a long time. It's weird that the Patriots dynasty has like 4 different eras, basically.
After this game, Eli only had one fewer ring than Brady.
Yeah, and I think Brady's won more playoff games than Eli's won regular season games since then.
Yeah. This is the game, as I say in my article, that clinched the fact that Eli will one day join Joe Namath in the wing of the Hall of Fame reserved for quarterbacks who don't deserve
it. I mean, I don't even want to talk about the Edelman stuff, but a lot of people talk about the Edelman because Adam Schefter brought it up on
That was insane. Nate Burleson brought it up in the postgame show.
Oh, it's funny because I thought Nate Burleson was coherent compared to the other guys in the because I never watch the pregame stuff during the year because, or even the halftime because we have it on Red Zone a lot if I'm not watching the Jet game. So I didn't see any of Nate Burleson. I have really never seen any of it. But the other guys are so bad that he's just like is decent by comparison. But that's insane. I mean, maybe his friends, maybe the same agent.
You had sent me earlier in the week a Homer article in the Boston Herald saying, could Edelman be a Hall of Famer? And it was so preposterous that we just laughed about it.
And I had even forgotten about it when I saw, like, after the game. Like, I didn't even connect it to.
Yeah, well, we've discussed it in the Facebook group. We're not even going to entertain
that. Okay, after discussing it for 8 minutes. Okay, sure.
Yeah, all right. Number 16 is the first L.A. Rams Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl 14, Pittsburgh 31, L.A. Rams 19. The Rams were basically the Giants. They were 9-7. They were like the worst team to ever make a Super Bowl. But the funny thing about that Rams team is like the Rams were a dominant team in the 70s. They went 10-4 better 6 years in a row. And they had a top 10 defense. And
history doesn't remember them because they don't have like a lot of Hall of Fame players. Ferragamo isn't really remembered.
Well, they had the fearsome foursome on their
on the defense,
defense,
but the offensive line. The offensive guys really don't stand the test of time.
Yeah, and they but they lost 4 NFC championships. They lost of those 6 years. They lost in the playoffs 3 years to the Vikings, 3 years to the Cowboys, and then by 1979 their window's closed. And then all of a sudden they end up in the Super Bowl, and they actually had a chance in that game. They actually took a lead.
And also, the Steelers have now won 3 titles in 5 years. They look they feel completely unbeatable.
Yeah, So the Rams take a 19-17 lead. On a halfback option, Loris McCutcheon takes a handoff and throws it to Ron Smith to make it 19-17. And then Bradshaw throws an interception on each of the next 2 possessions, but the Rams cannot extend the lead. And then Bradshaw throws a 73-yard
deep pass
touchdown.
Stallworth. That play got Stallworth in the
John
Hall of Fame.
Stallworth. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Stallworth and Lynn Swann, 2 of the worst.
I mean, they both made the Hall of Fame on their Super Bowl prowess. So if Edelman played in the 70s, he'd already be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, anyone who played on the Patriots, on the Steelers in the 70s.
Just like, I mean, if it worked now, Bruschi and Seymour and all those guys would be first ballot.
They'd all be. Well, Richard Seymour should be.
I mean, they put Troy Brown in. They'd put Lawyer Malloy. They'd put every single one of those guys.
Yeah. All right. Number 15, I have after the 2009 season, New Orleans 31, Indy 17. A 14-point spread is a lot, but obviously the Colts are driving to tie the game when Peyton Manning throws a pick six that makes.
But I don't remember that game. I haven't really rewatched that game recently at all. But didn't the Colts take a big lead at the beginning of the game?
No, they did.
They're up 10-0.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Well, this is what I want to talk about that game. So that was the season when the Saints started 13-0 and the Colts started 14-0.
And the Colts threw their last 2 games on purpose.
Yeah. Into December, we were talking about not only could there be one undefeated team, we could have 2 18-0 teams leading in the Super Bowl. That was the drama in December. Then obviously Tony Dungy intentionally loses to the Jets.
With Jim Caldwell.
Some idiotic, or Jim Caldwell, excuse me. Yeah, did I?
Tony Dungy was at this point my coworker. We were watching these games. Jim.
Yeah, he probably defended the decision. Oh yes, I have in the article. Tony Dungy idiotically. Oh, so I got to edit that.
It's Caldwell. I remember because the Jets are 7-7. Rex had famously declared them out after they lose on a last second touchdown at home. 7-3 game to Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Who somehow owned them, even though they must have only played him, a couple times once he left the Chiefs. He says, we're out of the play. Amazingly, Rex Ryan, bad at math, says, we're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Finds out that was wrong. getting killed by the Colts, can't stop Peyton Manning, and then he calls off the dogs. They have a kickoff return for a touchdown, I believe, also the Jets. They win that game. They beat the Bengals, who aren't trying because they know they have to play the Jets again the next week. And then, of course, the Jets win their first two playoff games and lead the Colts at halftime of the AFC Championship game. Yes. So maybe, like, it's not a great team if a 7-9 caliber Jets team is leading them in Indianapolis in the third quarter of the AFC Championship game. We don't appreciate as much like the great teams from the 90s, and maybe it's because of the salary cap era. Like, if you were a good team, you won your conference championship game like 51-3, right? You look back at what the Bills and the Niners and the Cowboys used to do. Like, that's what they did in their good years.
The actual score of a game.
The Bills beat the Raiders 51-3. Like, they...
Exactly.
We have not mentioned the Bills yet.
The Colts take a 10-0 lead in that game. The Steeler, the Saints catch up, and then of course they.
I announced at Amitai Dagan's house or Josh Weiss's house. We watched that Super Bowl when it's 10-0 Colts. Like, oh, the Colts are going to win this by 40. Like, I announced this game is over.
Not a good call.
And I was wrong.
But by the way, I just gave away one of them. Can you name the only other onside kick in a Super Bowl to occur before the fourth quarter?
Okay, so Saints was the Eagles didn't do it last year. It'll ring a bell, but no, off the top of my head, I can't.
It was in the Patriots Falcons game after they scored to make it 28-9.
And they recovered it?
No, they did not.
Oh, interesting.
Recover it.
Okay.
Yeah, the Patriots were down by so much.
In the third quarter, that's interesting. Okay.
A non-surprise one. Obviously, the Sean Payton one was a surprise one. All right, number 14, I have the first Rams-Patriots Super Bowl. You know, obviously, the Patriots were massive underdogs, 14-point underdogs, which is we have not had a spread of that high since 2001, even when we had like...
I mean, there have been so many upsets. It would be hard for a game, a Super Bowl, to have a spread bigger than that.
Yeah, exactly, which is why... And every time there's been a massive spread other than the 49ers-Chargers, every other one, the underdog not only has covered, they've won outright.
Yeah, I think that's why they would be very afraid to have past 10 or 11.
The Broncos were 14-point underdogs in 97, they won. The Patriots were 14-point underdogs in 2001, they won. The Giants were 13.
Now, if you're going by the... If your metric is how mad are the fans, well, like, the Rams fans are... It's a weird situation because they had just won.
Yeah, exactly. They won 2 years before, and so that's why I only have...
But it was also astonishing that they lost. The Patriots were this fly-by-night team. I mean...
The Patriots, after the Super Bowl, were consensus the worst...
I said it to the Patriots fan. I mean, I'm sure I'm an a-hole for saying it, but I said it to, like, the next morning in school, like, to the Pats fan, like, congrats on the worst team ever winning the Super Bowl. To be fair, that guy had told me, like, 8 weeks earlier that he was a Giants and a Pats fan. And then 17 years later, there's no Giants stuff on his Facebook page.
Tom Brady, just so we can remember how much of like a game manager nothing.
I'm sure there's an article like worst guy to ever win a Super Bowl, like won't do anything. Bledsoe's going to be the quarterback next year.
Oh, for sure. He was a sixth
round. I'm sure there's some scorching takes if you could go through some archives.
With 81 seconds to go, he was 11 for 19 for 92 yards in that game. And they took over with those 81 seconds to go, tied at 17. And the assumption was, well, you don't want to. You just want to kneel. You know, just want to run, because the Rams have no timeouts left. And if you do incomplete passes, you're going to punt back and then give the greatest show on turf a chance to come back themselves and kick a game-winning field goal. And so Brady throws checkdowns to backup running back J.R. Redman on first down, and then he gets a first down. And then he throws another checkdown to Redman, who runs out of bounds. He only looked out. Only one pass in that entire drive was to anybody other than J.R. Redman. Mm-hmm. He hits Troy Brown for 23 yards, and then of course Adam Vinatieri hits the field goal. Yeah, so that's number 14 on my list. Number 13 on my list is the Broncos-Packers Super Bowl, which I just mentioned a second ago, 1997 Super Bowl.
Put my lucky hat on. Hold on. Yeah.
So here's the crazy thing about that game. So the Broncos were 14-point underdogs. This was a tremendous upset.
Well, people were assuming that, like, whoa, this is what the Broncos do. They get to the Super Bowl and they're wildly overmatched.
Exactly. So the Broncos' previous three Super Bowls, they had lost by 32 points.
On average.
The AFC had... On average, they lost by 96 points combined in three games, which seems almost impossible. The AFC had lost 13 consecutive Super Bowls, because when you look back at it in hindsight, this spread is impossible to understand. The Broncos were the best team in football that year by just about every metric.
Right. Terrell Davis was like understood to be an absolutely incredible, like, you know, if you had said he's a Hall of Famer at the time, you would have assumed like he was an immortal, basically, not just like a...
Yeah, they led the league in scoring that year. They had the number one offense. They had a top five defense. They had the league's best point differential by far.
But they're playing the defending champion, who looked really good in the Super Bowl the previous year.
And not just the defending champions, but Brett Favre three-time MVP. Was the back-to-back to back, which has never happened.
Yeah.
You know, may never happen.
Yeah, people
again.
Forget how good Favre was. MVPs I mean, it's a little bit of a fallow period. It's like the post-Jordan, the mid, you know, I guess in between Jordan or like post-Jordan in the NBA.
So I'm going to argue something else. Steve Young was at his apex then. The problem is that at the time, you know, we didn't look at numbers the right way. So Steve Young would throw for like 29 touchdowns and five interceptions, and Favre would throw for 34 touchdowns and 20 interceptions, and we'd be like, oh, Favre's more touchdowns.
So your argument is that Favre wasn't the MVP, which is fine, but I'm just saying, like,
Steve Young,
the quality
Steve Young
of quarterbacks,
sure Steve Young wins those Chester MVPs.
It's the post-Montana, pre-Peyton Manning era. It was a little fallow, is what I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah, Elway's old.
And Marino's old.
Yeah, Marino's old and done. I mean, Elway's obviously not done.
Yeah, he's not done, but he's almost done. And Marino's done, and Kelly's done, and Aikman's done.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that Super Bowl was incredibly exciting for three quarters. Then the fourth quarter was super boring. It was punt, 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 until the final 2 minutes again.
Sports Illustrated put on the cover that week, best Super Bowl of all time. Now, that's been passed by about 11 different games since then. I made a pretty strong case for this when we ranked the Super Bowls. What was it? 2 years ago, I think. But
I think
it was a great game. It felt more than any other game because we didn't get Brady Breeze this year. We've really never gotten the immortal quarterback versus immortal quarterback other than Manning
Breeze,
the Manning
that we discussed,
the Manning Breeze game. That's really
and you had a few in the 70s.
No, I'm saying since then, since this game. We get Elway Favre. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're getting Chris Chandler's out there. Like, you never get... I mean, Warner, McNair are two Hall of Famers, basically, right? But
McNair's
he's not
in
the Hall
of Fame.
I mean, he's a Hall of Fame-level player, certainly, at the time.
No, he's
at,
not.
At
no,
that time?
He's in the next category with, like, Randall Cunningham and you know...
Guys I hear. I don't know what those guys have in common. I don't know... so that's it, right? Because, I mean, Eli sucks, so there's really no... I'm trying to think. I guess McNabb. We love McNabb, but McNabb Brady didn't feel at the time like some Titanic matchup.
McNabb is in that category also. He's good. He's not a Hall of Famer.
I mean, I guess like Roethlisberger, Rodgers. But they're right. The point is there have not been. This game felt like a Super Bowl. It felt like such a big deal.
Well, let's think about it. So you have Troy Aikman against Jim Kelly 2 years in a row. Those are Hall of Famers, but not like top 20 guys. Right.
Yeah. I guess by the fourth game, you have like a guy who's in his fourth Super Bowl versus a guy trying to repeat. I guess that counts. But since that, you know,
you have Elway, Brett Favre. We talked about you have Tom Brady.
Well, yeah, Elway Montana, but like in hindsight, that's better. And plus, it wasn't a good game.
Yeah, Montana Ken Anderson. Ken Anderson.
Well, and Montana Marino, but Marino's. I mean, he's an amazing rookie. He's a rookie, so you don't know the
Tom Brady, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. Tom Brady, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and then all these other.
But these were like, all right, here are the top two guys. Here are the top two teams, obviously, and like here's a Titanic battle between these two teams.
Yeah, I mean Montana Marino, especially because 84 for Marino was the greatest season by any quarterback ever.
Right, but he's a rookie, so at the time you don't understand how big of a deal it is.
But that season was a huge
deal. it's Montana's only second Super Bowl, so he's not an immortal yet. He's just a great player. If you remember, every single guy on those teams was like an all-pro. Like the Broncos were littered with all-pros. You know, they had Nalen and Atwater and Smith and McCarthy and the Packers also.
Yeah.
Mark Shimura
I don't know if Mark Shimura is the first time I would have mentioned. I might have gone with Reggie White.
I was going to go to defense. I was going to say Reggie White and is Sharper on that team. Like, not a lot of great guys.
No, he's later.
Butler. So, Leroy Butler was the safety on those teams.
But here's the crazy part about that game. So, you know, Brett Favre is 28 years old, is a three-time MVP, and the Packers are like, all right, we're fine. Well, Brett Favre never went to another Super Bowl. And the Packers wouldn't make it back for a long time, but yeah, they were defending champions. So how devastated are you, really? You know, you've still
and they lost the they lost a very close game to a team that was like 1% better than them. You know, you're devastated, right? But not you could say you could make. You can make an argument that shouldn't even be on the list in a sense.
Yeah, when we get to the top 12, these are just about all teams who have not.
Well,
won
this is like a 5-hour podcast at this point.
That's fine. We're at the half an hour mark right now.
Yeah, but starting with the fact that we spoke for so long, this is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've been talking for 5 hours. That's true. All right. So number 12, I have the Patriots over the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers were like a...
Yeah, I don't want this. Let's skip to the next one. Like, this isn't even... like, the Panthers didn't deserve to be in the Super Bowl, and then they didn't deserve to, like... I mean, they played so poorly in this game. I don't understand.
Well, they played great in the fourth quarter.
They scored a lot of touchdowns, especially. But they gave up a lot of touchdowns. Yeah. I mean, like, this would have been an atrocious team winning the Super Bowl.
I mean, let me put... Akiva, if your team... was tied in the Super Bowl with less than a minute and a half to go. And
yeah,
you lost.
Fine. I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's not a lot to discuss here. Like, it's a pretty straightforward, like, you lost to a better team in a close game, similar to the other. Like, that doesn't.
All right. Okay, fine. All right. Number 11, I have.
Very similar. The difference is that they got down and actually. They were at the 1 yard line. But this was, I mean, this wasn't a close game. It was 16 to nothing. People forget it.
Yeah, and they came. Well, the crazy part of this game is in the first half. The Rams had five long drives. Kurt Warner threw for 277 yards.
Field goals.
They got into the red zone five times. They hit three field goals. They had a turnover on downs and a missed field goal. So they only led 9-0 at the half. Yeah. All right. So fine. That's it. Let's get to the top 10. Number 10, your beloved Jets, your lone Super Bowl victory.
I mean, probably until itself, 5 years ago, a lot of people would have considered this one. I do think, other than the one play games, which we'll get to much later, where you're literally a play away or an inch away or something. And also, I don't count the Titans as an inch away because they were the inferior team and they were an inch away from tying, but they still probably lose an overtime.
From tying the game, exactly. Yeah.
And also, like, they weren't, I mean, yeah, I guess the Titans, you haven't even said the Ravens-Niners game, but it's almost identical. The difference is, I guess, the Niners probably would have won, right, because they're not down by seven in the Westbrook play. I mean, the Crabtree play. Like, they would have been an undeserving winner. I don't think I think that game should be outside the top 15 the Niners lost. Honestly, they were getting demolished and they shouldn't have won that game.
Well, when we ranked our Super Bowls a couple years ago, you thought that was the worst Super Bowl, and I thought that was...
No, it was an unwatchable game. Everyone left their Super Bowl parties because there was a delay. Like, that ruins part of the game.
And as I argued with you at the time, that was equally true of the Patriots-Falcons game. The only difference is one team finished it off and one team didn't. So if you're anti-comebacks, you got to be consistent.
I think the Jets is... Like, the Colts... When we talk about locker rooms and fan bases, I think the Colts locker room is... different than any other locker room of any of these games we've talked about.
But hold on.
I think their mouths are agape.
Yes, but the game itself was an unwatchable game. It was
not a good game. They lose by two scores. But I just think
hold on. Also, the Super Bowl didn't really mean anything.
It's like if Mike Tyson. It's like if Mike Tyson, instead of losing in the ninth round to Buster Douglas, lost in a blowout in round one. Just like absolutely gets demolished and loses in 5 seconds, like Aldo does to Conor McGregor, if UFC guy.
But again, here's the thing. The Colts, at the time, the NFL's teams, they were still the NFL champions, and then they lost this exhibition game.
Okay, so that's an interesting argument. You're saying that it doesn't matter yet.
It was embarrassing, but it wasn't. It was like it was a team losing their bowl game.
So you think that, so you're spinning it that they weren't even trying, which is interesting.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying
they didn't play their starting quarterback. In hindsight, why does Unitas come in late in the game? And Morrill was a good enough player certainly to win a Super Bowl. Why does he play that game? Like, think about what Skip Bayless would do if LeBron doesn't play, comes in late and scores 20 points in the fourth quarter, but he missed the game until it was out of reach. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. It was very odd. Yeah. And it was Earl Morrill comes in for the next game. So let's get to the next one on my list. So number 9 on my list is 2 years later, the Baltimore Colts against the Dallas Cowboys. So let's talk about this one for a second, because no one talks about this, but this was actually a really good game. So it's the first year after the merger. The NFC, the Packers, won the first two Super Bowls easily. The NFL, the next 2 years pulled off upsets, the Jets over the Colts, and then the Chiefs over the Vikings. Super Bowl V, we have two conferences within one league for the first time. The Baltimore Colts are moved over to the AFC, actually. And they are playing in the Super Bowl, a young team never before played in the Super Bowl, the Dallas Cowboys. The Colts are 2.5-point favorites. The Cowboys dominate in the early going, but have to settle for a couple of field goals. And then you have this crazy play where Johnny Unitas throws a deep ball. It bounces off the hands of the intended receiver, appears to possibly graze the fingertip of Cowboys Hall of Fame defensive back Mel Renfro, and then falls into the hands of John Mackey, the Colts tight end, who gathers it and gallops 75 yards for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Now, under the rules at the time, if a ball touched one offensive player, another offensive player was not a legal receiver unless a defender touched it in between. So the question was, did Renfro's finger graze the ball or not? And he insisted, the Cowboys insisted it did not, but the refs ruled it did. So you have that sort of crazy play that leads to a touchdown for the Colts. The Colts take a lead. It's 13-6. And then, and this is a reverse of the Super Bowl we just talked about, Unitas leaves in the third quarter. He gets hurt, and Earl Morrill comes in. So Earl Morrill comes in. They're winning 13-6, but they've really only had that one miracle play offensively. And he actually starts moving the ball against the Cowboys defense. But he drives all the way down, throws an interception. Then he drives all the way down again. This is even a weirder play. This game had a lot of weird plays. He hands it off to Sam Haverlack. Haverlack is supposed to toss it back to Morrill for like a flea flicker type play. But Jethro Pugh, the defensive lineman for the Cowboys, breaks up the play. And, and so Haverlack doesn't know what to do. He looks downfield and chucks it to Mackey. But before, if you remember, they were targeting Hinton, and it gets tipped, and Mackey catches it. This time, the running back on an option is targeting Mackey, but Hinton steps in and intercepts the ball from his own teammate. So now he's running. Then the ball gets stripped by Cornell Green of the Cowboys. Old football was almost like slapstick sometimes. While he's running towards the end zone, the ball bounces out of the back of the end zone, and so it's a touchback for the Cowboys after all that. So anyway, so we have fumble, missed field goal, punt, interception, punt, fumble, interception. It goes back and forth, back and forth. Finally, it's tied at 13 with just a couple minutes left in the game, and the Colts drive down the field. Another ball that bounces off. This is what happens. It's 13-13. Excuse me. And the Cowboys have the ball at midfield, trying to get into field goal range to win the game. And a Morton pass bounces off the hands of wide open Dan Reeves. Dan Reeves would have some bad luck in the Super Bowl, wouldn't he? And it gets intercepted, and so instead of the Cowboys driving to win the game, it's the Colts who come out and kick a game-winning field goal.
Okay.
So I thought that was a very good game, and it was pretty devastating for the Cowboys because they had so many chances to win.
Yeah. All right. Number eight, we already discussed, the Niners-Ravens. I mean,
incredible comeback. Incredible comeback.
Nobody was happy after that game, other than Ravens fans, and Joe Flacco got a zillion-dollar contract that even at the time you knew he didn't deserve. The Patriots?
Yeah.
Eagles game you have, this is the worst ranking, definitely the worst ranking on the thing. You could argue this shouldn't be in the top 20. The Eagles lost to a superior team. They were inept to the point where like they couldn't handle a 2-minute drill, turned into an 8-minute drill. They trailed by 10 late in the game. Like there's nothing about this game that puts it, this is the least impressive loss of any of these 20 games.
Can I give the counterpoints? Okay, counterpoint number one is that the Eagles had been to the NFC Championship game 4 years
ago. Yeah, so they're playing with house money. Now they made the Super Bowl.
No, it's not that they're house money. It's that this team, like the Vikings, has never won a Super Bowl, and they've been close year after year.
Their fans did not think they'd win. They never appeared like they would win, and then they didn't win. This is not a devastating loss compared to a lot of the other games that we've talked about.
The Eagles started out the season, so 3 years in a row they lose the NFC Championship game. The biggest problem is that Donovan McNabb does not have a weapon. He gets Terrell Owens in that offseason. Owens, through 14 games, has 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns, and the Eagles are 13-1. The Eagles were the favorites at that point in the season to win the Super Bowl. The Patriots weren't like a massive juggernaut yet. Tom Brady was not an elite quarterback yet. The Eagles were the favorites. Then the Eagles lose Terrell Owens at the same time of the year that they lost Carson Wentz last year, by the way. Okay? And so the Eagles are massively depleted. But then, in an almost, you know, like a almost like the Knicks in with Willis Reed, Terrell Owens makes a courageous return to the Super Bowl on one leg. And the Eagles actually outplayed the Patriots in the first half. And the game was tied.
I mean, how could this be above like a team that lost by a yard? I mean, the Eagles never get a chance to tie or win with the ball, which is the definition of a close game in the fourth quarter.
Because coming into the season, the Eagles fans were already devastated and desperate. Then in the season, they were the best team in the league in December. And then coming into the game, the player who they had lost, which was the reason they were the underdogs in this game, comes back and, by the way, had a monster game, 9 catches for 122 yards. And then they take a lead in the first half. And then, yes, in the third quarter, they blow it. It's 14-14. The Patriots score twice. It's 24-14. And then the narrative is, and my memory is, that Andy Reid and McNabb took 8 minutes to drive when they were down 10 and needed 2 scores, and McNabb was vomiting all over the field. That's not actually accurate. Their drive took fewer than four minutes.
They were just moving very slowly.
Yeah, that's how our memories, you know, remember it. It's like the Mandela effect. But actually, they score a touchdown. There's still, you know, 2 minutes to go. And they and then, by the way, the onside kick fails, but they hold the Patriots to a 3-and-out, and they get the ball back with 46 seconds to go, down by a field goal. So it wasn't impossible. They have no time.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so this is a very typical like game you see every Sunday on the Red Zone channel.
Except for the fact that the team had lost 4 years in a row and was, you know.
I'd like to hear from one of our Eagles guys if you know, how they felt after this game. But I imagine it's...
Prior to the Nick Foles Super Bowl last year, this was the most devastating loss for a Philadelphia fan of our age in any sport. I can promise you that. More than the Allen Iverson.
All right, let's rip through these last ones because this is long. Okay. So this next game is 18-0, right? The Patriots losing to the Giants. Yeah. From a historical perspective, I think this has to be won. I think what was lost here is bigger than the Super Bowl.
But the Patriots fans can't be that devastated because they have so many rings.
They have so many rings, fine. But they're very entitled, as we know. They're a different fan base than any other fan base, especially now when they like literally go into every year expecting to win the Super Bowl. I just think the difference between this game and forget, let's since Super Bowl III, it's the only time where a team lost and probably said, like, like when the game was over, can't believe the game was over. Like even, you know, Brady throwing the deep bomb to Moss. Like I'm sure they all thought like, oh, he's just going to catch that. And like that's just what happened this year. They had, you know.
Yeah.
In hindsight, they started slowing down 8 weeks before this. And the writing was on the wall.
Yeah. The second half of the regular season.
But losing to this mediocre team on the craziest play certainly at the time, the craziest play ever. I think like their eyes fell out. This has to be higher than it is, because number five, you have that game felt like a Super Bowl number six, the Patriots Giants.
But during the game, it was actually
a sloppy game, but every play felt really big. It felt like, oh my god, I can't believe it's the fourth quarter. It feels like it's the second quarter.
No, for the first two and a half quarters, we assumed, all right, at some point the Patriots
and then just never happened, which is sort of like this past game, which like we assumed that the game would pick up on both sides.
Yeah, most of this game was not an exciting, and I just rewatched this game. Most of
not
this game
exciting
was not an
game.
Exciting
I agree.
Game, honestly.
But yeah, the only we're about to talk about game that felt like a wild card game, the Steelers-Cardinals, which didn't feel like a Super Bowl at all. The Cardinals were an atrocious team with no fan base. They had no defense. They gave up 50. I remember watching a game that year. They gave up 56 points to a Jets team that didn't make the playoffs. Like, this was a bad team.
Yeah, they got blown out at home to the Vikings.
It's the only Super other than the blackout December game. Also. It's the only Super Bowl party I've ever been at where like a million people just left at halftime. It's like, oh, this is just really boring. Like, it doesn't feel like a Super Bowl.
Well, the teams, nobody cared about the Cardinals. I agree, and the Steelers, you know, not that exciting. But if you are a Cardinals fan or a player, and they do exist,
Yosef
you never
Feltz
won, team. Yeah. And the way you lost was devastating because you had the lead in this game multiple times.
All right, so it was a very weird game. The game doesn't even start till the James Harrison play. That's really when the game starts.
Well, the James Harrison play is the greatest.
Yeah,
play
it is. It literally swings 14 points, but that's really when the game starts. But then the Eagles go up 20-7 in the fourth quarter, and then Larry Fitzgerald kind of takes over, and then there's one great play. The Fitzgerald play is incredible, and then the Holmes catch is amazing. There are a lot of
this game has so many incredible.
This
plays.
It is a bad game with like five amazing plays. That's really what it was.
All right, you had multiple score changes late in the game, and you
I just feel like they have no fans. They had no fan bases. They were happy to be there. They would have been the worst team to ever win the Super Bowl. They probably would have been worse than that 9-7 Giants team.
Yeah, look, you know my opinion about these teams, the Cardinals and the Rams and the Chargers and, you know, the Diamondbacks in baseball, these fake teams with fake fans. You know my opinion about that. But for the purpose of this, we have to put ourselves in the feet of whoever, you know, in the shoes of whoever these teams' fans are. There is somebody there.
Yeah, all right. So the next game is the second Niners-Bengals game, the late 80s Niners-Bengals game, 20-16. It's a bad game. It's a boring game. It's a rematch, which like at the time was kind of boring for a Super Bowl.
Well, it was 8 years later. I mean, the
Bengals
had
a different quarterback.
The
Niners have the same.
They were a totally different team. The crazy part to me about this game is that there's something in NFL history called the drive, and it's not the drive in this game, and I don't understand how that can be. Right?
The Elway, and not only is it something called, I think it was 1 year later or something. But wasn't this called the drive too?
But if you Google the drive, the only thing you find is John Elway's play.
Elway also had two drives. Elway had something they called the drive too. Yeah. Oh no. So because you know why? Because the first Elway drive is 86. The second one is like 89 or 90 or something. So the drive had already happened. Yeah, so how could you call this the drive when the drive was the 86 Browns game?
Yeah, no, what this is famous for
the
is
John Candy
Montana's
is the most famous
John
thing.
Right,
Rice had the best game for receiver. You know, you could hate on Edelman, but he, you know, he probably had, you know, probably top five.
Yeah, but for the Bengals, this is devastating because they've had two Super Bowls and each
one.
Yeah,
especially in hindsight, if you add the hindsight, never get back, right? Never even get especially close.
Yeah. All right, number three is many would say the greatest Super Bowl of all time.
Yeah, okay, so this is, and I said it before, and I'll take it back. Like, this is, you know, two Titans going at it, and Brady Wilson, except it's not two Titans in their prime the same way the Favre-Elway thing is. Like, you don't realize at the time, and some people still don't realize, all the MMQB writers don't realize how good Russell Wilson is now.
Yeah.
My take, which I've said 100 times.
Number three, by the way, is because the Seahawks were defending champs, so, all right, you didn't win two Super Bowls in a row, boo-hoo. If the Seahawks have never won a Super Bowl, you know, this is just
the you throw up. I would have thrown up after this game if I was a Seahawks fan. Literally just like but I'll also say and I've said this take 100 times, but the play call they called was bad, but the idea of passing on that down was definitely the right thing to do.
Oh, of course. Yes, they didn't that was not the mistake.
It was just a bad play call. You throw a fade or something that can't be intercepted.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Yes. You and I and
you can't. You can't run. You can't run on that play. You run. You have one run, and if you run on that play, then every other play is a passing down.
You're forced to throw the next two. Exactly. So. Yeah. The coaching mistake in this game is Belichick's failure to call a timeout.
Yeah. Belichick screwed up the game. He should have ruined his whole legacy. If the Seahawks win this game, that this is because Popovich has that game, right? Popovich is a legend who essentially.
Takes Duncan out for the rebound.
Still thinks it was the right thing to do now, but 100% cost them a championship because Duncan makes that rebound. The Spurs win that game by 7 or 8 points, and they win the series in six.
Yeah,
the same thing. Belichick lost control of that game,
but because the Patriots end up winning through no benefit, not because of Belichick, but because of Malcolm Butler. Pat's truthers. I mean, the very next day, I linked to it in the article. Bill Simmons wrote like a retroactive diary of this game. And he says at the time, you're such a mistake by Belichick, but now I've had 24 hours to think about it, and now I realize he's actually a genius. And by not calling a timeout, he forced Pete Carroll to stress him. That doesn't make any sense. Pete Carroll had 40 seconds.
Right, if there was like 11 seconds left, then you could worry about it. But no, you need to... Brady can drive the ball with 20 seconds left. All right, but that's been beaten into the... Yeah, okay, fine. So...
Yeah. Number
I mean,
two
it's very
Scott
simple.
Norwood.
Number two is very simple, because there is no history. It's the Bills' first Super Bowl, but there's no history, because this is the first of their four.
Yeah, if it's reversed, if this is the fourth in a row, instead of, you know, I mean, it's how much infinitely.
It can't be beaten. If you lost a 70-point lead, it couldn't be beaten. It would be the worst loss in sports history. At the time, it probably was. Yeah. I mean, yes, if losing a fourth straight Super Bowl. However, it's fascinating. We have not mentioned the word Bills, really, until now. The next game, I understand, that's a pretty straightforward loss. And then the third one is a blowout. And you don't have really any blowouts on this list.
And then it's
not a blowout.
One,
it's a little closer than people remember.
I mean, I remember by the fourth Super Bowl that Bills.
It was understood that they would lose, correct.
I
mean,
it was
all right. I think sort of logic would dictate that the first one would be close and the second one would be a blowout, but they actually had a chance. And listen, they lost to a better team.
Yeah, it's
the Super Bowl they should
have
won was this one,
and
the Redskins won maybe.
Yeah, for the Vikings to lose their fourth Super Bowl and the Bills to lose their fourth Super Bowl, it's depressing because you're like, oh my God, we lost again. But you were an underdog.
You're prepared
for it.
Yes.
Close in the game. Yeah. Exactly. And then number one, of course, is 28-3.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say. Like, if I would never watch another sporting event again other than biathlon if this happened to me. Yeah. Chester, what are you doing next week? Do you want to go to Utah? The biathlon's in America next week. I will come to, fly to America. We'll fly to Utah together. We'll go to Soldier's Hollow. We'll watch Johannes Thingnesbo.
I'll ask, will Jen give me
you have to explain to her what biathlon is.
Yeah, would that be the worst thing a husband's done ever?
Like leave the family to go watch biathlon in Utah for a few? Yeah. For sure, she'll like think that's code for like, I don't know, cheating on your wife or doing heroin or something.
You missed my reference, but anyhow, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Kiev. So we kept it under an hour.
It feels like it was much longer. I don't know why.
Well, again, because we've been speaking on the
maybe
phone
you've
for,
been
like,
boring me. All right, but I appreciate your list. I hope the football historians appreciate this. Some people maybe.
Well, listen, the football historians, this is a last kiss for them. There's going to be no football, at least.
Yeah, no football talk till we get Kalish on for the draft in a couple months. I think we still have one more week before we do our massive movie rankings. Maybe that should be like a 2-week podcast so we like kill a lot of time.
So what are we talking about?
I don't know.
Like
give us suggestions. People should give us suggestions and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, if listeners want to,
I'm out of ideas.
Recommendations. We.
It is weird because yeah, like we get like 100, we get like a million ideas for the for Robin Akiva Needs a Podcast. So yeah. I need like a separate sort of like ideas for this podcast now. What if you came up with an idea? Why don't you, actually, you did do, come up with this one.
A secondary wheel.
Not a wheel, but like I just need like a secondary flow of like sports and pop culture related ideas that we could do.
Yeah. Probably the sports ones that Rob vetoes in the other podcast.
We don't get a lot of sport. We really haven't gotten any sports ones.
The play-by-play of the Madden game, I thought
yeah, I'll say the sports fans really liked that one. I thought it was a lot of fun. We loved it. The game was funny, had some fun moments. But the non-sports fans, like, that's a non-starter to them.
Well, but that's what but I think that's why that you and I should have done that on this podcast instead of you and Rob doing
so
it.
So you're,
on
like, retconning, podcasts. Like, old podcasts and making them.
In hindsight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll figure stuff out.
Yeah, we have another good idea for this podcast, but it's already been reserved by the other podcast. It's all ready to go. It's all baked and just, you know.
Oh, you mean you're on the wheel. You have a podcast on the wheel.
Yeah, but the whole thing is ready and prepared.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. I actually want, that's, what's that? That's TV theme song bracket. We're gonna decide the best theme song ever. The one thing about that is I almost want that to happen in March, because March is bracket season, famously. If we could wait a few more weeks on that, and then that comes up, like I will pick that as my wild card,
as the Kiva's choice.
Yeah. But not until March. Like I think in March, that's.
But you guys have never hit.
Never,
Robert
even
Kiva's
when
choice.
We had two spots on the wheel for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how your wheel dynamics.
What do you mean? It's very simple. Everything gets one spot except
you got to publish all the rules. No, but then the season three.
That's it. That's the only. That's the only variables that season three episode seven gets extra spots on the wheel.
But then you have a secondary wheel for the shows. It can be on season three, episode seven. But
no, that's a fishbowl. You don't understand what the fishbowl is?
Nah, there's fishbowls.
No,
wheels and fish.
No, this is very simple. If you don't understand that, then I'm guessing nobody understands it. Because, no, if season three, episode seven comes up, we just pick a show out of a bowl, from ping pong balls. That's pretty simple.
Wait, it's a ping pong ball? I thought it was a fishbowl. Oh, there's ping pong.
You didn't know that? He always shakes up the ping pong balls.
Why is one of these metaphors a wheel and the other metaphor? Why don't you use the same?
I don't know. How would that work? What would there should be a mini wheel? That's more confusing.
So if you had to do a third one, you would do a third sort of randomizer?
If we did it, well, we have a coin flip. That is a third randomizer. That hasn't been used yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you do it.
I'm trying to think, how else would we? I guess like random.org? I'm not sure.
You could do Ink-a-Dink.
Yeah, we could do Ink-a-Dink. You know? We could do 21st Finger Is It or something. We could play Duck Duck Goose with like all of our listeners.
Yeah, rock.
You could do rock paper scissors.
What's your take on people who call that game Rochambeau?
Morons. It's like I try to be acceptable of like other accepting of other.
You're not even how much. What are you saving like 1 second of your life because you get rid of like one of the syllables of?
And I always thought like Rochambeau is from South Park. It's like kicking people in the balls or something.
Well, I thought Rochambeau was a short way. I thought it's a regional dialect for rock, paper, scissors. Is it not?
Oh, I thought like what's isn't Rochambeau from like one of the early seasons of South Park? They do a lot of like kicking people in the nuts.
I gotta Google this.
It was another big Cartman thing early in South Park run, or maybe.
Rochambeau is the game of rock, paper, scissors.
What about Google Rochambeau South Park?
These are the syllables called out by players of rock, paper, scissors to synchronize their time. Yeah, so I don't know.
Google South Park.
It doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah. South Park is kicking each other in the balls over an object that the last one standing wins.
Yeah. See?
Okay, but if you Google Rochambeau, the top hits are all about rock, paper, scissors. Why do people call?
I mean, I guess they haven't played Rochambeau in South Park in like 20 years.
Oh, it's in Northern California.
Sometimes people write in, and because we watch season 3, episode 7 of shows, people write in like, why don't you do South Park? And then you go to like the website and like, what's South Park? It's like Cartman has an orgy with cats or something. It's like season 3, episode 7. It's like, oh yeah, we're probably not going to do that one.
Yeah.
Or like It's Always Sunny has like, the gang gets racist or something. It's like, all right, that's probably a little blue for us.
So apparently the San Francisco area had a large population of East Asian immigrants, and there was a similar Japanese game called Jean Ken Pon.
Ooh.
And the theory, there's little historical evidence, but some are arguing that Jean Ken Pon got Americanized into Rochambeau.
Oh, so that's why we don't play it. It's cultural appropriation.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you and I only play rock, paper,
that's
scissors.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Rochambeau is for racists.
Okay. All right. I think we had fun here.
Okay. Kiva, I will talk to you for 4 hours next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
I surely long for you.